Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted small business podcast host. I'm here with Cameron Tope, and his company is Emerson Property Management. Now, are you the owner, the founder, the president, or just a guy that wandered in off of the street and stole a shirt?
A little bit of both, I guess. Yeah, founder, president, CEO, all the above. Chief weed puller.
is managing a property that difficult?
You know, Jeremy, what I tell folks is it has a long feedback loop. You know, if I make dinner for my wife, I very quickly know whether that dinner was good or not, right? Like, she gives that feedback immediately. Whereas in managing a property, let's say you put a Band-Aid on an AC system or a tenant, you know, kind of you bend some policies and bend some qualifications to get a tenant in place, you might not know that kind of Schrodinger's cat, you know, theory where you don't know how much damage you've done until you get into that property. And that might be 6 months, 9 months, a year later. And then you go in there and it looks like a meth house or, you know, it's just totally destroyed. So that's that long feedback loop. So when property management's done well, when you have a system, it looks easy from the outside. It's almost like an athlete that runs, like when you see Usain Bolt run, and it's like that dude just glides. But there's so much work that goes in to make it that easy. I think from the outside.
So what's the value proposition when you are talking to somebody who owns a home and they come knocking?
You know, we have a couple different avatars, or I say a couple, we have like seven or eight different avatars. And it really depends because you have the people that are moving for, you know, work. They get relocated, they have a really low interest rate mortgage. Maybe they want to come back. You know, in Houston, we have a lot of people who go overseas for work. They might just be gone a couple years. And those people want a little bit different. They're like, hey, I want you to take care of the home I raise my kids in. I want to come back to this. Versus the investor that's like, hey, I'm all about dollar and cents. Like, tell me about how you're going to get and maximize the ROI on this property. So there are a couple different conversations, but, you know, it's like partnering with somebody who's going to take these things off your hand, who's going to be an expert. All we do is property management. We're not, you know, a guy in a truck with a couple tools driving around just like, hey, we do this as a side hobby. Or real estate agents, especially in this market where sales have really dried up, some agents jump into property management to try to help smooth out their cash flow. So we don't do this as a side. We've been doing this. I've been doing this just over, you know, almost 15 years. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that the professionalism, I think, is another big thing in this business. But yeah, to answer your question, the value prop slightly different depending upon what it is, whether it's maximizing returns or making sure we protect that asset.
Are you proud of yourself putting slumlords out of business?
That, I'll tell you, Jeremy, no, this is not a joke. We talk about that probably once every, I'd say, week, maybe even month, where we get an owner or we get somebody, a tenant, who's like, they wouldn't turn on my heat. They wouldn't fix the air. You know, their sewer backup. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that people do. We actually had a small acquisition of a handful of properties from another property management company. We got so many five-star reviews after taking over. Like 2 weeks after that, they're like, oh my gosh, you guys are fixing this stuff. You guys are we're responsive. So it is another way to look at like, hey, let alone are we doing good work, but you know, that fulfillment that you get from pushing out these dirtbags who neglect stuff. And it's short-sighted. I mean, really, it's just short-sighted. It's like, okay, cool. You can skip on some of these repairs and maintenance, but the tenant's not going to want to take care of it. So then the property gets dilapidated. Then you have a huge turnover, or now you've got a $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 make ready. And people don't want to live in that. They don't want to be treated like that. And now, you know, we're getting into a supply glut. We're not in the shortage we were like post 2009-10. And so people have options. And there's the internet and social media, so people can share stuff. And it's just, yeah, it is very rewarding, Jeremy, on that side to push bad landlords out and bad management companies. Because frankly, there are a lot of bad management companies.
I've heard it said that there's kind of a digital reflection of a company online based off of what you do. What do you think your reflection looks like?
I think it's professionalism. I think our reflection is we do what we say we're going to do. That's one of our big core values. And we're proactive. You know, that's why we call ourselves asset managers, because a property manager feels like, okay, fixing toilets, you know, respond to maintenance requests. Whereas an asset manager looks at things holistically or strategically. So I think you see that in a lot of our reviews and our reflection is like, hey, these guys really do care. And even on the team, they say, hey, we give a crap, you know, like we care. Like the people who work that work with us, they can see that. So I think that's another big reflection. When they go to some of the other management companies versus us, they can see that we're actually, we want them to be successful. It's not one of those where like, and a lot of our way our fees are structured and the way our services are designed, it's we win when the owner wins and we lose when the owner loses. So it's not like we're going to capture money at the expense of the owner. And I think, you know, that's, I'm still our biggest client, Jeremy. So I'm there with the owners and have designed this company to be beneficial all the way around.
A lot of businesses like yours, at the end of the day, there's tasks and things that you have to do that you can't do yourself. What's your vetting process for when you need new windows installed? You need that stucco repaired. You need that old deck is about to become a safety hazard and you need it replaced. What's your process for vetting partners to make sure that they're going to provide the service that you know the end client needs?
Yeah, so we have a form on the website where vendors have to go and apply. I've also been working with guys for, you know, I think our oldest is about 15 years or 12, 13 years. Some approaching almost 10. And we've had people who fill this thing out. They make sure we got, you know, I mean, the basic stuff. Make sure they have insurance. Make sure they're local. Make sure they have a crew or the work that they want. If they're going to do HVAC work, that they're certified to do HVAC. If they're going to be a handyman, just make sure they have their general liability. So all those basic boxes checked, then it's some references. But I've found that no vendor, even the ones that were bad, put down bad references. You know, it's like, they were great, you know, and you don't know if it's their mother or their relative, friend. So what we have found is we give them small stuff. You know, we start really small. If this was a vendor, say it is a huge deck remodel or tear down, or a, like you said, a stucco job or some large turnover, we would start them very small. Like, okay, let's see how they do with replacing a sink trap. Let's see how they do with just painting this this little office we have. And then they slowly build up and you get reputation. And Jeremy, we have a really good QAQC process or quality assurance, quality control, where after every single maintenance request, the tenant gets a survey and it says, how do we do 1 through 5? And 1 is bad, 5 is great. And we have this tracked amongst all the vendors to say, guys, you're getting a lot of 1s or y'all are getting a lot of 5s, which is great. And so we can see that graph and we track that over time. Every quarter we review that and annually we review that. And so that's a way it's like, hey, if they're doing really good work, but the tenants, you know, we literally had a vendor who took his work boot, did not take his work boots off in the house and then stood on top of the tenant's daughter's bed to work on a vent. Yeah, we've had some crazy stuff. Or a dude, one of our landscapers, peed on the side of the house. Like, just so, crazy stuff. And then, of course, they tell us, we get that survey back, and then we respond to that. So it's almost like that kind of Uber situation where you're giving a rating, we're giving a rating, and making sure that, you know, the vendor's giving us good pricing and whatnot, but the actual end user really is the tenant. And are they having a good experience? Were they punctual? Do we have to call them back out? Then they'll give us a 1. So we track all that, Jeremy. I think that's how we vet them, is start slow and then make sure that it's not like, okay, they've checked all the boxes. Like they're a great vendor. We're never going to check on them. It's that continual quarterly and annual review.
When it comes to property management, you know, I'm curious from the business process side as a small business owner, what does that look like internally in terms of like cash flow? Is that something where you have like a subscription type program? Is it like an annual deposit? Are you like on a revolving window of a specific time frame? And how does that play out in terms of, you know, managing your team and your expenses? This comes from, you know, one of our previous guests who had asked, you know, how are you managing cash flow within your business? And I'll give you an opportunity later to ask a future unscripted SMB guest for an answer to a internal question, business, marketing, etc. See if we can solve one of your problems. But they wanted to hear other people's experience with cash flow within their business.
And I think that's one of the big reasons that private equity is coming into property management, because it is very consistent. You know, the industry churn, so that and when you look on an annual basis, if you start with 100 clients, the average in the industry is a 20% annual churn, meaning at the end of the year, you have about 80. We sit about 10%. And it's almost impossible to get below that. Not impossible. We've been at 7 and 8 before, but when you start getting below 5, it's very difficult because, like I mentioned, you have people that were always going to come back. Like, hey, I'm doing this as an assignment. I'm coming back. Or I'm ready to sell. I've had something come up in my life and I am ready to sell my property. So the stickiness of the business is really, really good. And from a cash flow perspective, that makes your projections very straightforward. There are other revenue streams. So you have your property management, then you have some other revenue streams from the owners, maybe additional insurance or type of protections. You have, you know, there are certain owner or certain property management companies that charge a lot of different, like, additional add-ons, maybe maintenance services or annual HVAC checkups that will get a markup on that. We don't do that. And then there's the other side of the tenants. So this is where I think a lot of the tenants' right groups get upset, is because these property management companies, especially the private equity, come in and they say, cool, you've got a good job of charging your owner stuff, but now let's go after the tenants. And hey, I'm going to charge the tenant $200 to move in. I'm going to charge the tenant $200 to move out. I'm going to charge the tenant $200 to renew. I mean, I've heard crazy stuff. It's like, hey, for turning on the utilities, we're going to charge you. For turning off the utilities, we're going to charge you. For using the online payment system, we're going to charge you. So there are a lot of nickel and diming, but I think it is healthy, especially in this business when these private equity come in, because they just cut everything and then add fees. And the tenants feel, especially maybe not in Houston as much, since we have a lot of housing stock, but in areas like LA, in Chicago, New York, where housing is very scarce, I think they feel like they can squeeze those tenants. And, we don't do that. But there are a couple different revenue streams that I think do make cash flow projections very, very smooth, unless you do something really dumb or you have a huge client. Like, we don't have a lot of, I'm our biggest client, but most of our clients have 1 to 2 doors. But if you have a client that's got 30 doors, or maybe a larger private equity client from the acquisition side that has 100 doors, you got to be careful with that, because there's a risk. If you lose a couple of those people, you could lose 100 doors like that. But for us, very good diversification across many different owners and across, you know, greater, you know, Houston geographically. You know, we've had floods and harsh weather. So you get that geographic diversification, and then the diversification of owners and tenants, revenue streams.
I love it when SMB owners develop their own jargon. And can you think of any other industry jargon? Because I know in SEO, I am rife with it. You know, SEO, PPC, conversion rates, you know, CRMs, etc. So what kind of internal jargon do you find yourself throwing around? And what are you trying to capture with those small time savers?
Yeah. You know, there are so many things, Jeremy, I think that I say, especially, you know, being in Houston and picking up. I used to work in the oil and gas business, so I picked up a lot of jargon that I probably shouldn't say here from the oil field. But, you know, there's so many different ones, Jeremy. It's almost like I'm trying to think, because, you know, you have NOI, you have ROI, you have ROE, you have some of these like investor terms. Protecting the downside, these various little sayings. So I think there's innumerable amounts. And, you know, I think we actually have to be cautious of that, because when we do talk to clients, you know, they might not understand that. And I've actually heard that before. What is a door? It's like, oh, okay. So single family is 1 door, duplex is 2 doors. So people talk like that. But There are so many, Jeremy, that I couldn't even list them all. It's overwhelming.
So tell me a little bit more about your history. Did you just wake up when you were 18 and like, I'm going to own a property management, asset management company? You're like, 18th birthday, dad, I want to manage buildings. Or did a long, strange journey happen? What was that path?
Yeah, it was almost out of necessity. So when I graduated high school, it was 2009. And the big thing that my parents pushed me is like, go somewhere where you can get a job. Don't be one of these folks that comes out of school with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in debt and has no ability to work or can't find work, maybe working for $30,000, $40,000 a year. So I went into petroleum engineering. I graduated in 2013 with a job at BP, British Petroleum in Houston. And within the first like 6 to 12 months, Jeremy, oil went from $120 a barrel to like 30. I mean, it was almost overnight. They rescinded a bunch of offers for people. So like people had just got there or were planning to go within weeks and they rescinded offers. People had just got there a couple weeks after being hired and got let go. It was a crazy time. And I'm sitting there like, I've got $40,000 in student loans. I'm thinking like, okay, safe Fortune 500 company. I'm planning all this stuff out. And while I was panicking, there were a bunch of these old timers who were just Joe Cool, feet up on the desk, did not care at all. So I was like, okay, give me the secret, y'all. What is this? Why are you guys so nonchalant about this whole thing? And they said they owned a handful of rental properties. They're like, hey, I have four or five, or I picked up some over the years. This business is super cyclical. And so, you know, we want to ride out the low times. So they bought rentals and it just clicked. I started looking at that engineering mind. I was like analyzing this. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. At the time, 3-4% interest rates. I mean, things were, you know, to borrow money was super cheap. So it just made sense. So I started picking up a handful of properties and then I got, I think it was like somewhere 5-7 range. I'm like, okay, I need to hand this off. Like I want to hand this over to a property manager. And Jeremy, I could not find anybody. I got blown off by companies, didn't even show up to meetings. I had guys who were super unprofessional. Like I mentioned that guy in the truck type avatar where that was some of these folks are like, yeah, I do this. And no, I'm not going to send you a statement. No, I'm not going to do that. Like if you want it, it's $100 a month. I'm like, okay, pass. You know, are you even licensed? You're like, yeah, well, no, but, or yes, if somebody's asking, but no, you know, and it felt like then you had all these like PE backed, super large multinational or multi-state companies and they just feed you to death. So I said, I'm just going to do it myself. And then I just was managing my own properties and I had friends and family come in. And then it was like, okay, let's actually turn this into the real deal. Like, I think I got to like 30 or 40 with mine and other friends and family. I'm like, okay, hire my first person. Then I need to start like making this the real deal. And I think we incorporated in 2019. But I'd been doing it kind of myself with close friends and family since I think I bought my first one in 2013.
Two letters that have changed everything in every single industry everywhere, A and I, and you. What's your you in the A and I?
So we're using it a lot with comms. I think being able to diagnose, and we have a couple softwares that are using AI kind of on our behalf. So we have a maintenance system. So they're actually able to take in a request from a tenant. Hey, the HVAC system is not working. Cool. They immediately triage. Have you checked the breaker? Have you checked the filter? You know, is there a power issue? Just the basic troubleshooting steps. So that solves and gets the tenants a response immediately. Instead of waiting for my team to get in between 9 and 5, this, if they put it in at midnight at 12:01, they are getting a response from AI on, you know, basic stuff. So I think the ability to get the speed up and then diagnose and help the team understand maybe when a tenant writes something very lengthy or an owner writes something very lengthy to get that summarized quickly. We also use a lot of automations with Zapier because we kind of have a lot of these Frankenstein systems where you have your property management software, which is basically a glorified accounting software. Mm-hmm. And then we have a maintenance button on. So we have Zaps to kind of talk to all that. But I would say the majority of our AI is around comms and making sure we can articulate information and digest information as quickly as possible.
Looking forward to the future, I did a conversation with Brandon Moon, and he's kind of the bummer man of what if you die or you want to step away from the business. He's an end of business consultant. When you started, you probably hadn't thought about finishing it. Where you're at now, 5-10 years, are you looking to make this a lifestyle business? You want to go the distance with this? You want to turn gray and hand over the keys to, you know, your son or daughter, or get bought out? Like, what's the end game for you right now?
You know, I enjoy, as sick as this sounds, I do enjoy property management. And it's because you get that fulfillment, you know.
You sick bastard.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we say to each other. Okay, good. We can curse. I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I know you're good.
Okay. So that's it, Jeremy. It's like, I get so much fulfillment. And because I was there when I was trying to, like, I needed help. I was 20, in my mid-20s. I had a couple properties. I was stressed and anxious. And so I get a lot of fulfillment when we get a 5-star review or we get an owner that's like, listen, I don't know. You guys have been so great. You've helped me get a tenant in here. This investment is on autopilot. Or we had an owner who had like a $20,000, $30,000 eviction that they were going through. The tenant was horrible. They poured grease down the sinks. And we came in, got them out. And you know, now that property has been running for 4 or 5 years with almost no problems. So I get a lot of fulfillment from that. And I think the big thing we're looking at right now, or I am, is I just want to do really good work. I want to push out, like you said, the bad PMs. I want to help the good owners, because we don't go everywhere, and we definitely don't work with every owner. But owners that align with our you know, mentality of we want to take care of tenants, we want to take care of owners, we want to take care of these properties, and so we just want to own Houston. At some point down the road, you know, maybe we'll exit, maybe, but it's just so far away that, you know, I'm having a lot of fun. And I kind of went through this little crisis, Jeremy, about 3 years ago. So I guess coming up on 4, I actually live in San Diego. So business is all in Houston. And my wife and I visited out here and we're like, you know, this place is beautiful. Could we move out here for a little bit? And we said, that's it. We don't have any kids. Let's get out here and let's do it. And when I made that shift to move out of Houston, we had to have our processes and systems dialed in. Mm-hmm. And my fear was, if I'm not there, I'm not going to be able to run this thing effectively. And that was just an unfounded fear. That was saying, hey, these things have to be dialed in and you can deliver the exact same level of service. And I think that was probably the big, big thing for me, more of a hurdle than like, hey, what's the exit strategy? It's like, I can run this thing from remote. And if I can't, I don't want that type of business. If I have to be involved in every decision, we're never going to grow. So I would say maybe an exit down the road, but you never know. We have kids and they want to take over. I'm definitely, they'll start out as chief weed puller. But you know, maybe I don't have any exit. I'm just having a lot of fun. And I see myself doing this for a very long time.
Is there any passion, a project, a community you're building, anything that you've been able to contribute to because you are now a successful man of the community, a business owner running the show? Is there anything where you're pouring your heart or have something in your heart that you a pain, a challenge, an edge case, or are you Scrooge and just want all of the money?
Yeah, no. I think the big thing, I look at how can we give back to, let alone our team. Like I'm more of a, like a Richard Branson type where I'm like, you take care of your team, the team will take care of the clients, whether that's the tenant side or the owner side. So like, we don't have benefits yet. There's about 7 or 8 of us. That's something that I want to implement. So it's just like, as soon as we build the team up enough, I want to be able to add the 401k, add the health insurance. So those are the things I'm looking at from, you know, making the business stronger perspective. And then a giving back thing is, you know, it's one of my core values. One of our core values in the company is to make sure that we give back. It's actually our niche, or our saying is positively impacting people's lives. And so whether that's owners, tenants, or the community. And you could say, hey, we're going to provide safe and affordable housing, but we actually want to make sure that we get involved. So we do events throughout the year. We have a race that we sponsor for some childhood diseases, things like that, where we want to, to me, sitting on a pile of money doesn't do anything. It's just inert. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like, I'm a very simple guy, Jeremy. Like, I mean, anybody will tell you that. My wife and I drive a 2006 Honda Civic and I drive a 2013 Ford Fusion. Both of them have about 200,000 miles on them. But just, it doesn't give me the joy that helping, you know, get a 401k match or, you know, sponsoring an event that raises awareness. So those are the things that we do with the funds that, to give back.
Before you came on the show, is there any question in your head that you hoped that I would ask? And I haven't.
I think one thing that comes up from time to time is about, like, is investing in rental properties even worth it? Like, that's something that a lot of people ask, or like, and you kind of got into it already about the difficulty of property management. So do you want me to indulge on that one?
By all means. Yeah.
So I think I think we talked about it, you know, in the very beginning of, it might seem easy, but there are risks. And even though, you know, you drive around with your seatbelt off, driving 100 miles an hour, a teenager might have no, you know, qualms about that, might not feel anything. It's still a risky endeavor. So mm-hmm. I think there are certain things that are risky that you might, just because you don't know, you're taking that risk. And so I think having a good partner in that allows you to reduce some of the risk. You know, we have over 50 years of combined management experience. Now, if you have one or two properties and you're involved and you're going to be responsive to tenants, and you're staying up, you know, depending upon the state you're in, if you're staying up on all the changes, I think you could do that. And I think most people should manage their property in the beginning. And I do think it's worth it, Jeremy. I think there are times where you feel like it's kicking you in the teeth and you're like, what am I doing? You know, this tenant is destroyed the property, or I can't get this place rented. A contractor has screwed me over. But I think long term, if you can survive that first 5 years or so, that 10, 15 year mark is where you really get to see compound interest and inflation and, you know, good decisions bear fruit. But I do not think it is a short-term game. And I see a lot of the hype, people are like, ooh, rah, rah, get into rental property investing. You'll be rich and quit your job. It's like, do not do that, please. For the love of God, don't do that. Because if you quit your job, you're not bankable, you can't get loans. And then that inevitable AC that goes out or inevitable problem that comes up, you're going to be strapping for cash. And so I do think rental property is worth it. I think you have to know yourself on, are you going to be able to be confrontational if need be on enforcing your lease? Are you going to be staying up on stuff on policies and changes? Are you going to be involved? And if not, making sure you tap somebody or, you know, shop around, ask some questions, do some research and find somebody that can help you through that.
I was talking to Knight Lancaster, he's a lawyer in Nashville, and it just reminded me to ask, what about the legal side of things when it comes to home ownership, rental property? Seems to me that there's a whole nest of bees there. Do you have in-house counsel? Do you have secondary counsel that you go to? And what's the legal dynamic challenges that you've had to set aside budget for within your business to make sure you're protected as well?
Yeah, it is. So out of all the TREC complaints, Texas Real Estate Commission complaints, the majority of them are property management related. So it is a very litigious part of real estate. We don't have any in-house counsel. We have several different folks, specialties for like writing up the lease, specialties who deal with the eviction, specialties who deal on collections, or if we have to file a lawsuit against, you know, a vendor that didn't do what they said they were going to do or something of that nature. So we have various different people that we tap for that. And I think the big thing is making sure, like you said, you have some cushion, you have some margin in your business where when something does come up, just like we tell a rental property owner, like make sure you have a rainy day fund, because who knows when that's going to happen. And I think one other thing about the legal side of the business is just pick your battles. When I was young, I would die on a principal hill. I don't care. They are wrong. I want to sue them. I have become a little bit wiser over the years of saying, and I've had attorneys who they'll take your money and go file whatever you want.
Yeah.
But some of that I haven't seen a penny on. I mean, you know, there's things I've had to sue vendors in 5, 6, 7 years. I still haven't seen a dime. So I think picking your battles as well is one of those things that I did not do in the beginning. If I thought that you were going to screw us over or a tenant or an owner, I was ready to, and it didn't even matter if we were ever going to collect. I was like, I just want that, you know, the principle of you are wrong. I want that judgment against you. Hmm. And I think that's probably something that I would caution newer owners or business owners on, is just like, pick your battle. Like, don't pour good energy after bad. Like, if somebody's going to be a dirtbag, find out how did I let them in the system first and foremost? Was there any red flags that I looked over? And then, you know, pick and choose. Like, okay, cool. Just cut them off. Move on. Send the demand letter. Do the basics, but don't get so caught up on right and wrong. I think those are expensive things to prove.
Some businesses end up being defined by their regulation, you know, like, and they require, you know, some custom solutions. Like, if there's surprising regulations everywhere, you know, whether it's oxygen monitoring, if you're using a lot of CO2 to keep things cold in refrigeration, what are some of the most surprising regulations that you've found yourself living with, and what do you try to prepare your new people that are coming in? Hey, you need to be thinking about this, and it's a big thing. It's not a small thing. It's a big thing.
So the Texas property code changes every 2 years. So it's almost like a built-in, like, hey, we need to review this every 2 years. So if there's any owners that are listening or whatever state you're in, I don't know what the other states change or how frequently, but like your lease, maybe you had a tenant in there 3 and 4 years, your lease parts of it might not be enforceable anymore. One of those was changing the day you could charge a late fee. It went from the second to the third to the fourth. So there's just basic stuff like that that I think you just have to stay on top of. Some of the crazier ones are like you're not allowed to give a non-renewal to a tenant. In certain states, in Texas, you can, but you know, there's California investors that come over to Texas and are like, I'm kind of like, I want to come back in a couple years, so I don't want to rent it out. And they're afraid that they can't tell the tenant like, hey, listen, we give the tenants plenty of notice. 60-day notice is what our leases say. So there's no surprises. And obviously the housing stock, like I mentioned in Houston, is much different. There's options. It's not like coastal stuff where there's limited, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you just have to see we track what's going on in other states, like big stuff. You cannot not accept Section 8. There's things like that. Or what can you take felonies into consideration? And there's always things that are going on, I think, elsewhere. Texas is pretty business friendly and pretty landlord friendly. There are a couple things that are a little nuanced, but you just have to stay on top of that, those changing things. And I think the crazier ones are more, I see in other states and that haven't really come to Texas yet. Austin had a city ordinance, I think, at one time where you had to have a 30-day notice to vacate. So if they didn't pay rent, you basically had to wait a whole other month till they didn't pay rent again till you could even file, which, you know, from an owner's perspective, you could be losing 3, 4, 5 months of rent. So there's various things. Jeremy, I think we could be here all day talking on house. I mean, there's stuff in every different state and municipality that changes, but in Texas, we've been pretty even keel.
We touched on it before, but from one side of the equation. So Matt Brooks of SEOteric, he said, AI and LLMs are your least trained but most popular customer support representatives. And that's the representation of a new channel for marketing of Claude, GPT, Gemini, Copilot, adding this kind of interpretive layer to what we got used to for a long time as small business owners of, hey, I know search. People are going, you know, look up stuff so I can do create content and build links and get rankings. And that was the goal. Well, now we have this nebulous visibility. And for whatever reason or for however it works, you kind of show up and LLMs say stuff about you. What's been your experience with that? Positive, negative? Is there any proscription or prescription that you've done? Has it impacted your marketing strategy at all? Any remediation or proactive stuff that you've taken on because there's this new channel?
I am very bad about staying on the forefront of technology, Jeremy, to be honest. And I think if we do a really good work, that and we continue to get good Google reviews. You know, we have about 300 five-star Google reviews, and we've been officially in business for 5 or 6 years, really when we were taking on third-party clients. And we push that, right? Like, hey, if you have a good experience, give us a review. 10, if you had a good experience, please give us a review, because it helps us. So I think that's, I try to control what we can and then not worry about what we can't. I do not understand, like you say, some of the LLMs and how they rank folks. I have gone in, like almost everybody, went incognito mode, typed in best, you know, your business in your area. And sometimes we show up and sometimes we don't. But I do notice that we get a lot of the bigger players in. I think, and I don't know how it's, if they have the marketing strategy dialed in, but I see like some of these larger brands show up, or brands that have been around a long, long time. You know, there's people in our business in Houston that have been around 30, 40, 50 years. Yeah. So they seem to somehow show up a lot. But I try to focus on the things we can control, like realtor relationships, you know, making sure that we're still getting out there and bringing folks coffee and breakfast. Hey, you guys have any challenges? You need any help leasing? You want us to run a comparative market analysis for your rental property? Or if your owner's having trouble selling, here, we put this little kit together for to help them walk through whether they should turn this into a rental property or not. We just try to add value. And I think that's the biggest thing is, like you mentioned, it's super nebulous. Like, I don't know if anybody really has it figured out. And but I do know that us making sure that we're staying with our ear to the ground on what our owners are saying, our current clients are saying, and then making sure that we still focus on when they do have a good experience, we document that in some form or fashion. And again, our big thing is Google reviews, but we have started getting into the Yelp and BBB, like getting them to push reviews there. But just getting, you know, taking care of our current clients, I think is a good way to, is a great marketing strategy, and making sure our referral partners are taken care of.
Let's kind of wrap up here. Give a shout out. Make sure people can find you. Is there a social media channel where you guys dominate, where you're very present and that you can find lots of information? List your website. Make sure I'll get it listed in the show notes for anybody that wants to follow up with you, has questions about property management, investing, asset management.
Yeah. Jeremy, I really appreciate this. So emersonpropertymanagement.com is our website. We have so much free content on there. If you're not even in Houston, if you're in another city and you want rental qualifications, click on our qualifications page. If you want help, if you're an owner who you're having trouble selling right now, we're seeing this a lot. We put an accidental landlord starter kit on there. Totally free download. You download it and it'll walk you through like, here's the things to think about. Do you have the money set aside? Is this, or could this be a good investment for you? So we walk through all that. I would just have them go there, Jeremy, or you can find us on YouTube. I think I'm up to almost 600 videos on YouTube, just delivering things that people ask. So, hey, what are you seeing in the market right now? How do you evict a tenant? And so there's so much free content there as well. And then, on our website, there's forms there for if you want to have a free strategy session or just consultation where you want to walk through a rental property, the numbers, we'll do a free rental analysis for you and everything. You can find that all on the website.
Delightful. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, Jeremy. Thank you.